Have you ever wanted to get the attention of a woman but didn't know how to do it? Well, this man tried to assassinate President Ronald Reagan. We're going to go over John Hinckley Jr.
We here at Angry Me Production want to thank our sponsor, Mobile Notary Mindy. She's certified with the National Notary Association. She's also bonded and E&O insured. She offers a wide range of services, including wills, powers of attorney, medical documents, healthcare proxies, living wills, certification of trust, assignment of personal property, HIPAA waivers, advanced healthcare directives, and 99 verification. You can find her on Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram at Mobile Notary Mindy. You can also visit her webpage at TexasMobileNotaryMindy.com. That's TXMobileNotaryMindy.com. Thank you so much and enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen of all ages, boys and girls, thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of Angry Me Production. We appreciate you coming in and letting us be a part of your lives. Week in and week out. We hope to do our best to present you with something that your eardrums delight in. Whether you're looking at us on YouTube or Rumble, or listening to us on Spotify, Google, or Anchor, or any of the other podcast services that we are currently on or trying to get on, we thank you. And if you don't mind, at the end of every episode, stop by, leave us a comment, leave us a like. If it asks for 5 stars, we'll take 5 stars, even if you don't like us. 5 stars are what it's all about. With that being said, we hope you enjoy our attempt to make our advocation our vocation. Ladies and gentlemen, let the games begin.
Welcome, Angry. Yes, that's right. We're going to go over John Hinckley Jr. and what he did to try to get the attention of Jodie Foster. So let's begin. John Warnock Hinckley Jr. was born in Ogmore, Oklahoma, and moved to a wealthy family into Dallas, Texas at the age of 4. His father, John Warren Hinckley, born in 2008, founder and chairman and chief executive and president of Vanderbilt Energy Corporation. His mother, Joanne Hinckley, born in 1925 to 2021. Hinckley grew up in University Park, Texas, and attended Highland Park High School. I would have to ask my dad. I think he went to the high school, same high school as my dad, in Dallas County. After Hinckley graduated high school in 1973, his family, owners of Hinckley Oil Company, moved to Evergreen, Colorado, where the new company headquarters was located. He was an off and on again student at Texas Tech University from 1974 to 1980, but eventually dropped out. In 1975, he went to Los Angeles in the hopes of becoming a songwriter. His efforts, which at the end of the story, find that kind of funny. His efforts were unsuccessful, and he wrote to his parents with tales of misfortune and pleas for money. He also spoke of his girlfriend, Leanne Collins, who turned out to be fabricated. In September 1976, he returned to his parents' home in Evergreen. In the late 1970s and early 80s, Hinckley began purchasing weapons and practicing with them. He was prescribed antidepressant and tranquilizers to deal with his emotional problems. Hinckley became obsessed with Jodie Foster from the film Taxi Driver, in which Travis Bickle, Robert De Niro Jr.'s character, plot to assassinate the presidential candidate. Bickle, was partly based on diaries of Offer Berman. Berman. Is it Berman? By the way, Bremer. By the way, there's people out there that were commenting on the last episode, and it was kind of funny. And this is just really offshoot from the actual topic. But, yeah, you didn't watch the rest of the episode because I addressed the issue that I can't say or pronounce most of the words, and a lot of people that are dedicated to actually listening to this show know that I use Stephen Hawking, not Stephen Hawking anymore, because apparently he was found on the list of on Jeffrey Epstein's little roster. But I digress, and it's addressed. Anyways, Bakel is partly based on the diaries of Arthur Bremer, who attempted to assassinate George Wallace. Hinckley developed an infatuation with Jodie Foster, who played played Iris Stenmaum, a sexual trafficked 12-year-old girl in the film. When when Foster entered Yale University, Hinckley moved to New Haven, Connecticut for a short time to stalk her. He sent Jodie Foster love letters and romantic poems, repeatedly called and left her messages, failing to develop any meaningful contact with Foster. Hinckley fantasized about conducting an aircraft hijacking or killing himself in front of her to get her attention. Eventually, he settled with a scheme to impress her by assassinating the president, thinking that by this achievement would place him in history and he would appeal to her as an equal. Hinckley trailed President Jimmy Carter from state to state and was arrested in Nashville, Tennessee on a firearms charge. Painless, he returned home, desperate psychotropic treatment for depression. His mental health did not improve. He began targeting newly elected Ronald Reagan in 1981. For this purpose, he collected material on the assassination of JFK. Hinckley worked Jodie Foster just before the attempt on Reagan's life. And he wrote, "Over the past several months, I've left you dozens of poems, letters, love messages, and the faint hope that you could develop an interest in me. Although we talked on the phone a couple of times, I've never had the nerve to simply approach you and introduce myself. The reason I'm going ahead with this attempt now is because I cannot wait any longer to impress you." Now, assassination attempt. On March 30th, 1981, at 2:27 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Hinckley shot a 22 caliber Roma RG-14 revolver 6 times at Reagan as he left the Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C. After the president addressed AFL-CIO, which stands for which stands for American Federation of Labor and Congress and Industrial Organization, which is a national trade union centered that is the largest federal of the unions in the United States and is made up of 60 national and international unions. Hinckley did wound a officer. Stephen Hawking, Thomas Donnelly, and Secret Service agent Timothy McCarthy, and critically wounded Press Secretary James Brady
Bill.
Though Hinckley did not hit Reagan directly, the president was seriously wounded when a bullet ricocheted off the side of presidential limousine and was hit in the chest. Alfred Antonacci, a Cleveland Harbor labor official who stood near Hinckley, saw him firing, hit Hinckley in the head, and pulled him to the ground. Within 2 seconds, Agent Dennis McCarthy, no relations to the agent Timothy McCarthy, drove onto Hinckley inadvertently on protecting Hinckley to avoid what happened to Lee Harvey Oswald, who was killed before he could be tried for the assassination attempt of President Kennedy. Another Cleveland area labor official, Frank J. McNara, Jorn Ananasi, and started punching Hinckley in the head, striking him so hard that he drew blood. Brady had been shot by Hinckley on the right side of his head and endured a long recuperation period, remaining paralyzed from the left side of his body until his death on August 4th, 2014. Brady's death was ruled a homicide 33 years after the shooting. At the trial, the government emphasized Hinckley's predicament of the shooting, noting that he had purchased a gun, trailed President Reagan, traveled to Washington, D.C., left a note dealing his plans, and selectively participated in devastating ammunition fired 6 shots. The defense, on the other hand, argued that Hinckley's action and his obsession with Foster indicated that he was legally insane. The trial was chiefly devoted to a battle of psychiatric experts concerning Hinckley's mental state. Because Hinckley was charged in federal court, the prosecution was required to prove his sanity beyond reasonable doubt. While detained, Hinckley attempted to commit suicide twice. For the defense, William T. Carpenter, who diagnosed Hinckley as a schizophrenic, testified for 3 days openly that Hinckley had augmented varied personalities from fiction and real life, including Travis Beckle from Taxi Driver and John Lennon. And Carpenter concluded that Hinckley could not emotionally appreciate the wrongful of his action because he was consumed by the prospect of magically unifying with Jodie Foster. David Baer testified that Hinckley's action followed very opposite of logic and that Hinckley did not exhibit signs of malingering, is a fabrication, warning, or exaggeration of physical or psychological symptoms designed to achieve desired outcome. Baer said that his opinion was in part supported by a CAT scan of Hinckley's brain showing widened Cecilia, Stephanie Hawking, let's Salsi, which a okay, in neuroanatomy, the Salsi is a depression or groove in the cerebral cortex. It surrounds a gyrus, creating a characteristic fold period of the brain in humans and other mammals. A feature Baer said was found 1/3 of a person with schizophrenia, but only 2% of non-schizophrenics. I guess that's the reason why I don't think he his opinion was that he didn't have schizophrenia, I guess. But Ernest Preliger testified that Hinckley had an above average IQ. His result was on the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, which is a standard psychological test of adult personality and psychology, dealing with multiple mental health professionals and disorders. Were highly abnormal. Specifically, Pledger said that the only person out of a million with Hinckley's score would not be suffering from serious mental illness. He was on antidepressants and all that stuff. And they had that on file. Why? Okay. Let's just keep on reading. For the prosecution, Park Dietas testified that he had diagnosed Hinckley with dysthymia, which is a mental disorder or behavioral disorder, specifically a disorder primarily of moods considered of similar connotations and physical problems as major depressive disorder. and three types of personality disorders, which were narcissists, which basically is a personal disorder characterized by a lifelong pattern of arranged feelings of self-importance, and schizophrenia, which is a personal disorder by a lack of interest in social relationships, a tendency towards a solitary and sheltering lifestyle or secretiveness, and mixed with borderline progressive-aggressive, basically characterized by a pattern of possessive hostility and avoidance of direct communications, enacting where some actions in social customary is typically possessive-aggressive strategies. Basically, he wanted to control a lot of stuff. Diaz found that none of these illnesses rendered Hinckley legal insane. His report said that there was no evidence that Hinckley was so impaired that he could not appreciate the wrongfulness of his condition and confirmed his conduct as requirements of the law. Sally Johnson, a psychologist in the federal prison who interviewed Hinckley, more than any other doctor, emphasized that Hinckley had planned the shooting and that he was preoccupied with being famous. Johnson said that Hinckley's interest in Foster was no different than any young man's interest in a movie star. The insanity instruction provided to Hinckley's juniors was based on American Law Institute's model penal code, which states, the burden is on the government to prove beyond a reasonable doubt either that the defendant was not suspicious from mental disease or defect on March 30th, 1981, or else that he nevertheless had a substantial capacity on the date both to confirm his conduction to the requirements of the law and to appreciate the wrongful of his conduct. Hinckley was found not guilty of reasons of insanity by June 21st, 1982. Now, the aftermath of this, after his trial, he wrote that the shooting was the greatest love offering in the world, in the history of the world, and was disappointed that Foster did not reciprocate this love. In 1985, Hinckley's parent wrote Breaking Points, a book detailing their son's mental condition. Wow, they actually made a poem. All right. On August 4th, 2014, James Bradley died because of a medical examiner determined his death was the result of a gunshot wound consistent thereafter, which basically it was labeled a homicide. Hinckley did not face charges as a result of Bradley's death because he had been found not guilty of the original crime by reason of insanity. In addition, since Bradley's death occurred more than 33 years after the shooting, prosecutors of his Hinckley was burdened under a year and a day law in effect in the District of Columbia at the time of the shooting. Before the Hinckley case, the insanity defense had been used in less than 2% of all American felony cases and was unsuccessful in most than 75% of the trials. Created in 1962, the Model Penalty Code insanity test bombarded the then-dominant Stephanie M. Nagnan test by 1981. It was adopted in 10 of 11 federal circuits and a majority of the states. And as a consequence of the public outcry over Hinckley's verdict, the United States Congress and other states enacted a legislation making an insane defense for more restrictions on firearms. Congress rejected the MPC test, and by 2006, only 14 states retained it. 80% of the insanity defense reform between 1978 and 1990 occurred shortly after Hinckley's verdict. In addition to restricting the ability for the defense, many of these reform cases also shifted the burden of proof to the defendant. For the first time, Congress passed a law stipulating the insane test to be used on in all federal criminal trials. The Insanity Defense Reforming Act of 1984, the IDRA, which is we just said the Insanity Defense Reform Act, executed the Model Penal Code, violating elements in favor of the executive consent connivity. Basically, if they were insane or not, afforded the insanity defense to a defendant who could show at any time of the commission of the acts of conditioning the offense. Basically, they're saying that if the person was insane, they couldn't in the right mind be prosecuted because they were crazy. At the state level, Idaho, Montana, and Utah abolished the defense altogether. Hinckley quelled a popularization of guilt, but mentally ill. Typically used when the defendant's mental illness did not result in sufficiently impairment to warrant insanity. There we go. I did it. Yay, me. A defendant receiving a GBMI, a guilty by mentally ill, verdict generally receives an identical sentence to a defendant receiving a guilty verdict. But the designation allowed for mental evaluation and treatment. Studies have suggested that jurors often favor a GBMI verdict, considering that it is a compromise. Basically, what they're saying is they give the person a guilty verdict with the GBMI, the guilty but mentally ill verdict. It basically says, yes, he did this. Yes, we're prosecuting this. And we're giving him basically the extent of the law. But he still has to serve his time. And he has to go through treatment and medical evaluation. And hopefully they can put him on a regimen of pills to stifle the mental instability. Now, I've had to deal with this when I was a correctional officer, and yes, they do that a lot. A lot of the people that are super mentally ill, and sometimes medication does not take to these people. They still get super, super crazy and everything. Sometimes, even if you put like 10 pills in something that supposed to fix a person, doesn't mean it's going to fix them. Some people are just too far gone. It happens. But let us continue. Charges in federal and some state rules of evidence laws have since excluded and restricted the use of testimony of an expert witness, such as a psychologist or a psychotherapist, regarding conclusion on ultimate issues of the sanity of the defense cases, including whether a criminal defense is legally insane. But this is not the rule in most states. Now, his treatment, Hinckley was confined to St. Elizabeth Hospital in Washington, D.C. After Hinckley was admitted, tests found that he was an unpredictably a dangerous man who might harm himself or any third parties, which he tried to compute himself with like two to three times. Anyways, in 1983, he told Penthouse that on a normal day, he would see a therapist, answer mail, play guitar, listen to music, play pool, watch TV, and eat lousy food, and take delicious medication. God, crazy people. Around 1986, Hinckley and the hospital begins seeking various conditional releases, which require judicial authorization. The Reagan family frequently spoke out against these requests. In 1986, the judge denied Hinckley's request to transfer to a less restricted ward. But in 1987, the hospital requested that Hinckley be transferred to a 24-hour unescorted pass, allowing Hinckley to visit his parents in Easter. On Easter, Glenn Miller, who had performed an initial evaluation of Hinckley, testified, "I do not believe he's suicidal. I do not believe he's a danger to Jodie Foster, and do not believe that he's a danger to Mr. Reagan or Mr. Bradley." Brady. But Miller also revealed that Hinckley had written a serial killer, Ted Bundy, sought the address of Charles Manson and received a letter from the Manson family member, Lorraine Frontman, or also known as Squeaky. The hospital subsequently withdrew the request for administrative reason, though it emphasized that the clinical assessment was unchanged. In 1992, again, but Miller also revealed that Hinckley had, in 1992, Hinckley again submitted a request for additional privileges, but was later withdrew that request. During this period, St. Elizabeth gradually expanded Hinckley's privileges by allowing off-site trips under custodial supervision. In 2003, Hinckley, for the first time, received judicial approval for a release proposal. Six local days visited under the supervision of his parents, and upon the successful completion and evaluation of these day visits, two local overnight visits, also under parental supervision. On June 17, 1909, Judge Friedman ruled that Hinckley would be permitted to visit his mother for a dozen visits of 10 days at a time rather than six, to spend more time outside the hospital and having a driver's license. The court also ordered that Hinckley be required to carry a GPS-enabled cell phone to track him whenever he was outside of his parents' home. Why didn't they freaking lowjack him with... Oh, man. Okay, I don't know why they didn't just lowjack him. He was prohibited from speaking to any news media. Prosecutors objected to this ruling, saying that Hinckley was still a danger to others and had unhealthy and inappropriate thoughts about women. Hinckley had recorded a song, Ballads of an Outlaw, which what prosecutors claimed was a reflection of suicide and lawlessness. Okay. Hands down, coming from the person that I could see. I could see the prosecutor's claim on this. There's times I'm like, why are they doing this? And this is like one of those times it's like, yeah, I totally get it. I understand. You could probably dissect that whole song. On March 29, 2011, the day before the 30th anniversary of the assassination attempt, Hinckley's attorney filed a court petition requesting more freedom for his client, including additional unsupervised visits to the Virginia home of Hinckley's mother, Joanne. On November 30th, 2011, a hearing in Washington was held to consider whether he was a full-time outside of the hospital. The Justice Department opposed this, stating that Hinckley still posed a danger to the public. Justice Department counsel argued that Hinckley had been known to deceive his doctors in the past. By December 2013, the court ordered that the visits he extended to his mother, who lived in Williamsburg, Hinckley was permitted up to 17-day visits and was eventually after completion of each one. Now, on July 27, 2016, the federal judge ruled that Hinckley could be released from St. Elizabeth on August 5th, as he was no longer considered a threat to himself and others. Pat Davis, one of Reagan's daughters, and then presidential candidate Donald Trump both denounced Hinckley's release. Hinckley was released from the Institution of Psychological Care on September 10th, 2016, with many conditions, including that he was required to live full-time at his mother's home in Williamsburg, Virginia, to work at least 3 days a week and record a his and record his browser history? Okay. Yeah, I totally understand. Okay, but weird, but understand. He was also prohibited from various activities, including contacting the Reagans, Brady, or the Foster families, watching or listening to violent media, accessing pornographic material, and speaking to the press. In November 18, 2018, Judge Friedman ruled Hinckley could move out of his mother's house in Virginia and live on his own upon locating approval from his doctors. In September 2019, Hinckley's attorney stated that he had planned to ask for full and unconditional release from the court orders that determine how he could live by the end of the year. Just over 2 years later, on September 27, 2021, the federal judge approved Hinckley's for unconditional release, being in June 2022. Michelle Reagan, Reagan's son, spoke out in favor of this decision, while Davis again denounced it. On June 15, 2022, Hinckley was in full release from the court restriction, and in subsequently interview with CBS, Hinckley expressed remorse of his action and apologized to the reigning Brady family as well as Jodie Foster. Now, that's about it on that one. From what I'm looking at right now, there's a bunch of media stuff that the Jodie Foster's Army was a hardcore punk band formed in 1991. Their name was a reference to the assassination attempt. Their erroneous song referred to Hinckley, Ohio new wave band Devo, recorded a song I Desire on their fifth album, Oh No, It's Devo, which brought the band concert because the lyrics had taken direct from the poems written by Hinckley. Hinckley has claimed that he has not received royalties for the use of the poem by them. But yeah, there's a lot of people that's tried to get on the bandwagon. I don't get it. I'm trying to get on the bandwagon with the whole going over these psychos and sociopaths that I read and everything. I mean, I'm doing it more of a historical thing. But here's a funny little detail now, and I'll put it in the descriptions, but you can visit him. You can see Hinckley now. On November 10th, 2021, Hinckley self-published another single called You Let Whiskey Do Your Talking onto the multiple streaming platform YouTube channel. And Hinckley announced that he was looking for members for his band. And June 15, 2022, after his restrictions were unconditionally lifted, it was announced that he would have been Hinckley's first live performance in front of a physical presence audience in Brooklyn, New York venue had been canceled over security concerns for vulnerable communities after it received threats. Three other planned concerts that summer in Chicago, Hamden, Connecticut, and Williamsburg, you know, were also canceled because of threats to the venues. I guess people still don't like Hinckley. So, but he does have a YouTube channel. It's fucking hilarious. He does music stuff on there. And before you ask, would I have him on the show? I'm still contemplating it. I still think I would, just to, I don't know. Maybe not. So if in the comments, if you think I should, and I mean, it's on stream, I I try not to divulge any kind of addresses or anything because I know security concerns. But yeah. Now, thank you all for listening. Thank you all for watching. Love you guys. Even the bad comments, keep them coming. I really don't care. I just find it funny that people are actually commenting bad comments. I love it. I really, any good press is, any bad press is still good press to me. Love you guys. Hope you all have a wonderful day.